Chapter 28. The Treasure Hunt. Flint's Pointer. Jim said Silver when we were alone, "If I saved your life, you saved mine, and I'll not forget it. I seen the doctor waving you to run for it, and I seen you say no, as plain as hearing. Jim, that one's to you. This is the first glint of hope I had since the attack failed, and I owe it to you. And now, Jim, you and me must stick close, back to back, and we'll save our necks in spite of fate and fortune." Just then a man hailed us from the fire that breakfast was ready, and we were soon seated here and there about the sand over biscuits. They had lit a fire to roast an ox, and it was now grown so hot that they could only approach it from the windward, and even there not without precaution. In the same wasteful spirit they had cooked, I suppose, three times more than we could eat, and one of them, with an empty laugh, threw what was left into the fire, which blazed and roared again over this unusual fuel. I never in my life saw men so careless of the morrow. Hand to mouth is the only word that can describe their way of doing, and what with wasted food and sleeping sentries, though they were bold enough for a brush and be done with it, I could see their entire unfitness for anything like a prolonged campaign. Even Silver, eating away, with Captain Flint upon his shoulder, had not a word of blame for their recklessness, and this the more surprised me, for I thought he had never shown himself so cunning as he did then. "Aye, mate," said he, "it's lucky you have barbecue to think for you with this here head. I got what I wanted, I did. Sure enough, they have the ship. Where they have it, I don't know yet, but once we hit the treasure, we'll have to jump about and find out. And then, mates, us that has the boats, I reckon, has the upper hand." Thus he kept running on, with his mouth full of the hot bacon. Thus he restored their hope and confidence, and I more than suspect repaired his own at the same time. "As for this hostage," he continued, "that's his last talk with them he loves so dear. I've got my piece of news, and thanks to him for that, but it's over and done. I'll take him in a line when we go treasure hunting, for we'll keep him like so much gold in case of accidents, and in the meantime. Once we got the ship and treasure both and off to sea like jolly companions, why then we'll talk Mr. Hawkins over, we will, and we'll give him his share, to be sure, for all his kindness." It was no wonder the men were in a good humor now. For my part, I was horribly cast down. Should the scheme he had now sketched prove feasible, Silver, already doubly a traitor, would not hesitate to adopt it. He still had a foot in either camp, and there was no doubt he would prefer wealth and freedom with the pirates to a bare escape from hanging, which was the best he had to hope on our side. And even if things so fell out that he was forced to keep his faith with Dr. Livesey, even then what danger lay before us? What a moment that would be when the suspicions of his followers turned to certainty, and he and I should have to fight for dear life, he a cripple and I a boy, against five strong and active seamen. Add to this double apprehension the mystery that still hung over the behavior of my friends, their unexplained desertion of the stockade, their inexplicable cession of the chart, or, harder still to understand, the doctor's last warning to Silver, "Look out for squalls when you find it." And you will readily believe how little taste I found in my breakfast, and with how uneasy a heart I set forth behind my captors on the quest for treasure. We made a curious figure, had anyone been there to see us, all in soiled sailor clothes, and all but me armed to the teeth. Silver had two guns slung about him, one before and one behind, besides the great cutlass at his waist, and a pistol in each pocket of his square-tailed coat. To complete his strange appearance, Captain Flint sat perched upon his shoulder and gabbled odds and ends of purposeless sea talk. I had a line about my waist and followed obediently after the sea cook, who held the loose end of the rope, now in his free hand, now between his powerful teeth. For all the world, I was led like a dancing bear. The other men were variously burdened, some carrying picks and shovels, for that had been the very first necessary they brought ashore from the Hispaniola. Others laden with pork, bread, and brandy for the midday meal. All the stores, I observed, came from our stock. Thus equipped, we all set out, even the fellow with the broken head, who should certainly have kept in the shadow, and straggled one after another to the beach, where the two gigs awaited us. Even these bore traces of the drunken folly of the pirates, one in a broken thwart and both in their muddied and unbaled condition. Both were to be carried along with us for the sake of safety,